A new Syrian opposition bloc has formed under pressure from the US and its regional allies. Now it's asking for official recognition, weapons and funds for its campaign to fight President Bashar al-Assad's government. But voices of dissent are already clear and loud, as the opposition inside Syria says the bloc abroad does not represent the Syrian people. Meanwhile, Iran is planning to host the meeting on Syria next week and says what's necessary is to bring the opposition and the government to the negotiating table. But what are the challenges? I'm Homa Lezgi and this is News Analysis. Stay with us.
It's been 20 months since Syria plunged into its deadly unrest. The Syrian government has repeatedly blamed it on armed groups backed by foreign powers. The opposition, however, has held Damascus responsible for the bloodshed. That's in spite of the fact that armed groups have been involved in the fierce fighting against the government. The groups have been receiving weapons and funds from Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and Turkey. They've also been provided with financial support, telecommunication, and military training by the US and its Western allies. And recently, under the pressure from their supporters, the Syrian insurgents have formed a new alliance to bridge the gaps between the opposition groups. Now the head of the new opposition alliance, the so-called Syrian National Coalition, calls on European states to politically recognize it to achieve their aims.
I request European states to grant political recognition to the coalition as the legitimate representative of the Syrian people and to give it financial support. When we get political recognition, this will allow the coalition to act as a government and hence acquire weapons, and this will solve our problems.
The US and its Western and regional allies allege that they're supporting the armed groups fighting the Syrian government to help them bring an end to what they call a brutal crackdown on civilians. This comes while a large number of civilians have been killed in attacks and bombings by the armed terrorist groups. Washington and its allies have openly spoken of regime change in Syria and have been blocking efforts to open talks between the government and the opposition. There's growing doubt on what the US and its allies really seek to achieve when it comes to their stance on the Palestinian issue. Arab countries that openly support insurgency in Syria refuse to back Palestinian resistance that's struggling for the liberation of occupied territories from Israeli occupation. Washington and its allies block national unity talks in Syria, but they push for Palestinian-Israeli discussions to favor Tel Aviv. Some analysts believe that America and its allies are adopting such a stance against Damascus because it's supporting the Palestinian and Lebanese resistance movements which are against the Israeli occupation. Others say such an agenda on Damascus is aimed at waging a civil war in Syria to divide the country into smaller ethnic states for the benefit of Israel.
Joining me now live from Washington is Dr. Randy Short with the Dignity, Human Rights and Peace Organization. Also with us now live from London, Sharif Nashashibi, chairman of the Arab Media Watch. And live from New York, Eric Draitz, founder of StopImperialism.com. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with this edition of News Analysis. My first question to Dr. Randy Short in Washington. Mr. Short, the newly formed Syrian opposition bloc, it's called the National Coalition, as you know, wants EU recognition now. It wants weapons and fund. Do you think that is the next step that we're going to see? And if so, what would come after that step?
Well, of course they want weapons. I mean, this was the whole purpose of Bloody Mary, a.k.a. Hillary Clinton, having the people gather in Doha because they were tired of the group that was ineffectual in getting rid of the legitimate government of Syria, which is under Assad. They brought these people together, and of course, now they've sanctified this unholy alliance of people who are basically al-Qaeda and other terrorist-type groups with the old group that are expats who really don't have a connection to Syria. Now they, because they've sanctioned this group, they are now trying to make these people who are bandits legitimate. And of course, they don't want peace. They want to take the government by force, so they have to ask for arms, because most people in Syria do not want this government. They do not want these people to be their government. So that's what's going to happen. they're going to have more fighting. And of course, this follows the election of Obama. So now we see what the plan is. They're going to ramp up the war against the government in Syria.
So basically, Dr. Short is telling us that he believes this is going to get more violent, that this new coalition is going to get yet more weapons and funds, and things are going to get more bloody than they already are. Now, Eric Drake's in New York. British FM William Hague, he was saying in reports today, in his words, we have to see in practice that this new coalition is inclusive and has the support of the opposition groups inside of Syria before we take a move to recognize it as the representative of the Syrian people. Do you think the West is actually reluctant in recognizing the coalition, or that we are going to see this move take place sooner or later?
Well, they're certainly not reluctant. I mean, this is merely a pretext. This is the window dressing, the prelude to recognizing them as the so-called legitimate representatives of the people of Syria. I would remind people that the precedent has already been set in Libya. The National Transitional Council, which also was not a representative of the people of Libya, was immediately given recognition by the Western imperialist powers. And through that recognition, they were able to leverage all of the other countries, the smaller, weaker countries in the region and around the world, to recognize that same entity. So I think that we've already seen that happen in Libya, and that is what we're looking at in Syria. And I would also add that moving forward, this new coalition, as they're calling it, is merely just a public relations stunt. This is rebranding the same so-called opposition that we saw with the Syrian National Council. These are not legitimate representatives of the people of Syria, even if they've been inside the country recently. One of the main problems with the Syrian National Council was people around the world saw that these were barely even Syrians who had been there in decades. The new form of this national coalition is a little bit closer to the people of Syria, but it still represents the interests of Western finance capital, NATO, and the Western imperialist powers. And so, I think that those nations like Russia and China and elsewhere, they've already recognized this.
So you say they're not as much far away from the Syrian people as the SNC was. Let's just put this question to Mr. Nashashibi now, with us from London. Mrs. Nashashibi, do you think there is any kind of support from the opposition inside of Syria for the opposition abroad and now for this coalition? And if not, where is that going to lead the situation?
Well, I think from the start there's been a certain suspicion from the opposition within Syria of the exiled opposition, because they feel that they're not on the ground, they haven't experienced and suffered the way that the opposition within Syria has. So there has been a divide among that from the beginning. Now, I think the aim of this coalition, this new opposition coalition, is to try and bridge this divide between the exiles and the domestic opposition. And it does include elements of both. So I think the point is to try and unify these. In terms of exiles being seen as Western stooges, I mean, this is something that the exiled opposition are going to have to play very carefully, because they will not have legitimacy on the ground if they are seen to be merely puppets. So I think this is the aim of all these talks is to try and get more legitimacy among a unified opposition rather than many different groups working, not working together, but sometimes working, in contradiction with each other.
You say that the issue of legitimacy and not being regarded as puppets of the Western regimes that are supporting that opposition. Now, Dr. Andy Short in Washington, there's a lot being said about, of course, how much influence the United States has had in the Qatar talks, for instance. We even saw the SNC come out and say that Washington is actually trying to reshape the opposition in a way that is going to serve its own interests. How much influential do you think the U.S. has actually been in forming this opposition?
Well, I mean, it's very obvious who called this new group, so-called new group, as Eric said, this rebranded group together. This was as a request of Hillary Clinton. This is the U.S. government acting on behalf of, I guess, its favorite ally in the Middle East, Israel. All the other countries, Saudi Arabia isn't going to go after Syria without having support from the United States. So this is clearly an effort to recreate the Middle East to hijack whatever efforts there are for social liberation and justice that with this so-called Arab Spring. So yes, the United States again wants to control the region, and it wants to get rid of this state, and they're willing to put in a proxy government. The same thing that Eric mentioned, they want to do Libya. This is Libya 2.0.
But of course, the question is how they're going to do that when it comes to the case of Syria. We're going to see a Libya-like scenario. I'll put this question to our guest in New York, Eric Dreitzer. Do you think, for instance, when William Hague says we are not excluding any option for the future, that that would mean military intervention, that would mean a no-fly zone, what we saw in Libya happen or not?
Absolutely, and I would also add that no-fly zones, humanitarian buffer zones, sanctions, all of these elements are merely preludes to wars, to interventions. We saw this in Iraq, we saw this in Libya as well. A no-fly zone was never about being in a no-fly zone. It was about providing a pretext for a military intervention, and this has been the goal of the United States all along. The issue has never really been just about Syria. The goal ultimately is to break the Shiite arc of dominance that exists from Tehran to Baghdad to Damascus and then to southern Lebanon with Hezbollah. And the United States and Israel and the Western powers more generally have to destroy that alliance. And the most apparent way that they're going to do this is by creating chaos in Syria. It's important to note that the issue of democracy and the issue of a functioning government is secondary to the United States. As we see in Libya, the goal was never the creation of a functioning government. They're perfectly content with creating chaos because chaos leads to a failed state, and a failed state is in the interests of the U.S., yeah. Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and the rest of their clients in the region.
And that just brings me to the next question on how the situation basically is going to be resolved in Syria. To Mr. Nasrashibi, if I may. Now, the current battles actually taking place between the Syrian troops and the insurgents, is this continued battle going to lead anywhere rather than a prolonged civil war? If not, what was in the way of a political solution? What is still in the way of some kind of a solution that could be brought about through negotiations, through some kind of a ceasefire?
Well, I think, unfortunately, I don't see any hope at the moment for a diplomatic solution because I think, you know, on the ground, the opposition and the government are very entrenched. Outside Syria, the foreign backers of all sides have become so entrenched in their support of each side that, you know, they're gambling everything on their side winning. And, you know, because of the fear that if their side loses, their interests in Syria will be lost as well. So I think, you know, everyone is so dug in to their positions that they are, although they speak of the need and the desire for a diplomatic solution, on the ground, you know, all signs seem to be leading to a military.
Mr. Nasrashibi, if I could just jump in here.
Will win outright militarily.
The question that critics are putting forward is why aren't we seeing Western officials, when it comes to the Syria crisis, bring about options that include political solutions? I mean, they're saying that we're not even hearing verbally. For instance, when it comes to the Palestinian issue, they always speak of the need for dialogue or negotiation. But on the case of Syria, more is said about how to assist the opposition, the armed opposition, rather than how we can bring the two sides together for talks. Now, that was an option that was put forward by Kofi Annan, by Lakhdar Brahimi even, which is representing the UN and the Arab League, but we're not seeing any kind of action, are we?
Well, because I think, you know, I think everyone has realized that there is, at the moment, no bridging the gap between the positions of the Syrian government and its allies and the opposition and their allies. From the beginning, we are no closer to seeing any common ground between those sides. So I think, you know, whoever even says that, yes, they'd prefer diplomacy, I think, you know, in reality, they're banking on a military solution because there is just, there's no common ground. And I don't see that changing anytime soon. Kofi Annan failed to bring all sides together. Yeah. Lakhdar Brahimi is not proving any more successful either. So I think it's really out of a lack of any hope that people are going to come together and actually work out a diplomatic solution.
Right. Dr. Andy Short, what do you think is the reason that political solutions are not working?
Well, because there's no incentive on the side of the people who claim to be in the opposition. In fact, the opposition that's on the ground in Syria doesn't support this armed opposition because they've been killed and massacred by the very people who say they represent them. And when there was this movement on the ground in Syria to oppose the government, and the government began to get the attention of the people, you had folks sniping and killing and shooting and bombing the whole way through, the same thing that happened in Libya. So armed conflict is the means to an end for those who want to get rid of the existing government of Syria. They have no desire to talk to people any more than there was no desire in Libya, because they know they have the backing of the United States. They have the Gulf states and those sheikdoms. They have people that will arm them where they can take state power without talking. Because if they talk, you have to bring all the stakeholders to the table. And a lot of these people that are supposedly in the opposition don't represent the people at all. They represent their own little sectarian or imperialist interests serving other countries.
And now, Eric Drates, let's go a little while back now and look at the Geneva Agreement that was made, which was supported by Russia, China. They've been saying for weeks and weeks now that we have to go ahead still with that Geneva Agreement, because it was an agreement in which the Assad government came forward and said, I'm going to go ahead with reforms, I'm going to start negotiations, and I want this issue to be resolved in a political manner. Now, looking at the story from the Assad's viewpoint, we're hearing him saying that, OK, I'm going to go ahead with the ceasefire, I'm going to stop fighting, but when the insurgents strike, I have to strike back. Why is the basically, what is stopping this ceasefire from working? Why are the insurgents striking, and why is this battle continuing? Is there, as some say, some kind of concerted effort to keep Syria in a state of civil war?
Of course there is. It's again, it's in the interests of the powers that be to continue this conflict and to keep it going. Remember that there are different factions within this opposition. There are factions that are on the ground in Syria, things like the National Coordinating Councils and various other entities, but there are also outside forces, so-called Free Syrian Army, and then the various other Al-Qaeda and extremist elements, which have been there really since the beginning. And it is those elements that continually sabotage this process. So when they say that there's going to be a ceasefire, the ceasefires break down because they're deliberately subverted. It's important to remember that a ceasefire which would allow for dialogue would create a political solution, and that's exactly the opposite of what the imperialist powers want. They have to topple Assad and put in his place a puppet government, as we saw in Libya. Moreover, Russia and China have for months now been saying that there is no other option. You have to have all parties come to the table and to negotiate. And the United States flatly rejects this. The objectives of the United States and of NATO and of the rest of the Western powers is to create this chaotic situation. We have to remember that these various factions in the opposition are not really on the same page. The Free Syrian Army, as it's called, is an entity that is really the creation of Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Turkey, with the United States lurking in the background. The Al-Qaeda elements, which came from Libya, such as the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group and others, they're also in that category of these outsiders. So I think that it's unfortunate that many analysts mischaracterize the nature of the opposition, because if they understood that, they would understand why these ceasefires never seem to work.
And speaking about the nature of the opposition, a lot has been said, Mr. Nashashibi, about the fact that terrorist groups, including Al-Qaeda, have basically infiltrated the ranks of the opposition, if we could say it that way. They've been in Syria, they've been carrying out bombing campaigns, for instance, in the capital, Damascus. The thing is, the United States and its allies basically being blamed for giving funds and supporting these insurgent groups that include terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda, the same groups they're fighting elsewhere. First of all, why do you think the U.S. is keeping silent on this fact, and also how the presence of these kinds of groups is going to affect the situation in Syria, especially even if or when the Assad regime is gone?
Well, I don't agree that there is a silence about this issue. I think there is a lot of concern from within the opposition and their backers about the jihadist and Al-Qaeda elements that have appeared in Syria. I don't think there's any silence about it. And I think the aim of these talks to unify the opposition was precisely, I think, in an effort to stop arms and other material support falling into the hands of these jihadist elements, which are extremely difficult to control and could result in blowback to the suppliers of these.
Well, if I could just jump in, Mr. Nashabi, the question here is exactly what you say here. How can we stop these weapons or funds from reaching the hands of these insurgents? I mean, is there a way to stop these weapons from reaching them?
Well, I was answering that. The talks that have resulted in this unified coalition of opposition groups means that there will be a more direct, singular channel to send this kind of support, instead of having a fractious opposition with, you know, each opposition group getting, you know, supplies from different countries. There will now be a unified kind of, hopefully a unified structure with which that support can be channeled, so that people know where that support is going and who is receiving it. I think that this is a big part of the point of these talks.
Dr. Andy Short, do you think that's going to help, a unified coalition that's going to help?
No, I think he's dreaming. We've seen this with the Contras. We've seen this in Afghanistan. We've seen this all over. When you give people who are trained mercenaries, killers, weapons, they kill people. When you pay people to destroy a society, they're not going to hand out daisies. And the U.S. government won't give the tank-busting weapons or the anti-aircraft weapons to these very people that they claim they support, because they're afraid they're going to be used on American citizens. So if you don't trust them to not kill you, why would these people, even if they were in one organized group, not do mayhem wherever they're let loose? I mean, come on.
And we're quickly running out of time. Let's get the concluding remarks by Mr. Dreitzer as well. Eric Dreitzer, do you think that the presence of these groups are posing a danger and will pose a danger for the Syrian people, even if and when again the Syrian regime right now goes and the Assad government goes?
Yes, of course. And I just want to respond to this mischaracterization, and I would call it propaganda, that extremists and the Al-Qaeda elements have come in after the fact. They were imported into Syria from the very beginning of this conflict, and they were brought there to do exactly what they're doing, to create chaos, to execute massacres. These are the death squads that have been mentioned all over the place in the international press, despite the fact that there's a blackout. They absolutely were. The New York Times, the Washington Post, it's all been documented. If you want to ignore the facts that are clearly evident, then that's fine. But the reality is that history will show they were imported by the imperialist powers, and this cannot be ignored.
Okay, I'm afraid we've run out of time, but of course a lot left to discuss here. I'd like to thank you, all of our guests, Dr. Andy Short with the Dignity Human Rights and Peace Organization there from Washington. In London, Sharif Nashashibi, chairman of the Arab Media Watch. Thank you, sir. And a big thank you to our guest in New York, Eric Dreitzer, founder of StopImperialism.com. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being on another edition of News Analysis. And thank you for staying with us. From me, Homa Lesgi. Until our next program, goodbye.